Reporting on page Yud Gimel in Gittin, Ois Lamed Zayin. So again, you have the end of the perek over here. A few Mishnayos deal with takonas that the Chachamim made mifnei davke shalom in order to keep peace between people. After the last 2.5 prakim or so from the beginning of the third perek of the Masechta, we're talking about things that the Chachamim made takonas that the Chachamim made mifnei tikkun olam in order to allow in the fourth perek, actually fourth and most of the fifth perek have been dealing with things that the Chachamim made in order to allow society to function properly. So now it continues with a number of things that they made mifnei davke shalom. So the Mishnah says elu dvarim omru mifnei davke shalom. The following are things that the Chachamim said that we should do mifnei davke shalom. The first one is koyin koyirishin. The koyin gets the first aliyah in the Torah. The achrav Levi, and second a Levi, the achrav Yisrael, and after him a Levi. And the reason is mifnei davke shalom, that promotes davke shalom, because that way you don't have an argument between people who's going to get the first aliyah and who's going to get the second. What about the koinim within the koinim themselves? Okay, it can't be helped, you know. By the way, there was a very interesting din in that regard, that if it's a shul of all koinim and only one Yisrael or Levi, then he gets the first aliyah. Because otherwise, yeah, if it's all the rest of them are koinim, they're going to end up arguing who gets the koin aliyah. So like this, instead we give it to the Yisrael or Levi after. But ordinarily we do this. There is the Gemara eventually goes into a discussion, which is not here in Ein Yaakov, about the fact that a great Talmud Chacham might outrank the Kohen in that. After all, we know Mam is a Talmud Chacham, Kohenim the Kohen God Olam Ha'aretz, and therefore that it might be that he gets the first Aliyah, and the Gemara gives examples of that. The Rambam, actually, in Pirush HaMishnayos on this Mishnah, speaks very strongly about that we should be doing that nowadays also. He says, how you talking? You have, and nowadays, it's common that they give the Kohen the first Aliyah, even if it's an Olam Ha'aretz, and you have Talmud Chacham in the shul. It's a bizoyan to the Torah, and he goes on and on about it, and it's not right. So even though it's the common minhag, he argues against it. But then when he wrote the Yad HaChazakah, he seems to have moderated that stance. He seems to, the Rambam seems to have accepted, listen, you know, this is the minhag olam, and you can't really change it. So he says, you know, it would be better to do it the other way, but the minhag olam is that you do it this way, and fine, that's how it is. So the Gemara asks, the fact that the Kohen gets first, actually, the Gemara is going to point out, is actually, because you have a mitzvah to be Mekadosh the Kohen, as we're going to talk about in the Gemara over here. So why is the Levi next? So one reason is because the Levi has a degree of Kedusha as well, because after all, he does certain tasks in the Bais Mikdash. And the other idea is because after all, the Kohenim themselves are from Shevet Levi, so having a Levi after the Kohen gives more honor to the Kohenim. Anyway, so the Gemara says Minahani Mili. Where do we know this from, that it should go the order of Kohen, then Levi, then Yisrael? Meaning, in other words, it is a takona de Rabbanon, but the Chachamim, if they're going to make such a takona, they have to be basing themselves on something. So where's the basis for this idea that should be the order? Amr of Masna, the Amakra, the Pasuk says, Vayichtav Moshe as a Torah azos, Moshe wrote this Torah, Vayitna ala Kohenim b'nei Levi, and he gave it to the Kohenim, the sons of Levi. Now, why do we need those last two words? Also, Anan lo yad inin de Kohenim b'nei Levi ninu. Don't we already know that the Kohenim are descended from Shevet Levi? Ella, so it comes to tell us, Kohen b'resha v'hado Levi, the point is, that first you should be giving the Torah, and in this case the Aliyah and the Torah, to the Kohen and then to the Levi. Because again, the Kohen himself is from Shevet Levi, and it also because the Levi has the distinction of doing certain avodas in the Bais Mikdash. The Gemara continues, Rabbi Yitzchak Napcha says that we have a different pasuk also that points out that the Kohenim are Bnei Levi, and again, we can darshan it in the same way, that it means that therefore it means Kohenim first, then Levim. So the pasuk says by the Egla Rufa, it says v'nigshu akoyanim b'nei Levi. The koyanim, the sons of Levi, should come forward, and they're the ones after the whole ritual is done. They're the ones who say kapur l'amcha Yisrael, and they ask Hashem to forgive the Jewish people for the guilt of this person's murder. So again, otu anan lo yadin and the koyanim b'nei Levi ninu. We already know ourselves that the koyanim are sons of Levi. Ela koyan b'reish v'hado Levi. So there also it means koyan first, then Levi. Rav Ashi says you have a third pasuk where we see the point that the Kohenim are Kohenim are distinguished, but out of Shevet Levi, but then Shevet Levi themselves has to get some kind of honor as well. The pasuk says in Divrei Yamim, Bnei Amram Aaron and Moshe. the sons of Amram, Aaron and Moshe, Vayibodol Aaron, and Aaron was singled out, was separated out, like Disha, Kodesh Kodashim, to say that he's holy of holies. So we understand, therefore, the Kohenim are Kodesh Kodashim, the regular Levim are Kodesh, relative to the rest of the Jewish people, and therefore they should be having the first two Aliyahs. Rav Chiya Ba'aba Omer Mehalchah, and Rav Chiya Ba'aba says, you have another posik for Kidashto. The posik says you should make the Kohen holy, and that means L'chol Davar Shebekdusha. As far as any matter of Kedusha, you always want to have what the Kohen goes first. So based on all these things, is why we have the Kohen getting the first Aliyah. So again, ultimately it's a Tachana of the Chachamim, but the Chachamim are basing themselves on one or another of these Psukim to say that if we're going to establish an order to prevent fights, then it should be first Kohen, then Levi. The Gemara continues, Tonad Ve Rabbi Shmuel, we learn in a Braisa from the Yeshiva of Rabbi Shmuel, about that Pasuk V'Kidashtoi, that it means, L'chol Davar Shebekedusha, means we're going any matter of Kedusha. L'ftoyach Rishon, it means that you honor the Kohen with opening up to speaking first. So you have a conference, you have teaching Torah, whatever, he should be the first speaker. So that's how Rashi explains it over here. There's other explanations. Rashi and the Ran and Nedarim, we also have this point in Nedarim about the Kiddushah, about making the Kohen holy. And they explain over there that it actually means that it's actually referring to the first Aliyah. So in that case, Levorech Rishon over here is going to mean something else. So, and they should be the first one to make the bracha, meaning by a suda. The Kohen should be the one who's making the bracha hamotzi, or who's leading benching. The little mona yofrishin, and also to take a good portion first. So when you have something that needs to be split up between several people, so what you should do is you divide it as evenly as possible, and then you honor the Kohen by picking which part he wants. Tosfos says that this is specifically talking about things where the Kohen doesn't yet have any ownership of it. So we're talking about, for example, let's say Maisa Oni, the Kohen is poor, and you have other poor people, so you split up the Maisa Oni, and you invite the Kohen to take his portion first. The tzedakah, or another example would be, like we're saying, by a Suda. On the other hand, Tosfos says, when you're talking about that there was a partnership, a Kohen and Yisrael have formed a partnership, and that now they want to dissolve it, then Adraba, it shouldn't be that the Kohen takes the first portion. And in fact, the Gemara says in Pesachim about that someone who does that, he won't see a sin in bracha because he's showing himself like he's greedy, like he has to be Dafka, the one to pick. So here, when we're talking about assets that belong equally to both of them, then no, you shouldn't do that. So the Gemara says, Omalei Abaya le Rabbi Yosef. So now Abaya asks Rabbi Yosef, if we're saying that this point of the Kohen getting the first Aliyah is based on the Kiddushah, so what do you mean? Why is the Mishnah saying, Nei Darche Sholem? Why is the Mishnah saying that this is because to promote Darche Sholem, Daraisa? Based on this, it comes out that it's Daraisa. Omalei, so Rabbi Yosef says, fine, that's what it means. Daraisa, Umipnei Darche Sholem. It is Daraisa to honor the Kohen first. And the reason why the Torah says to do that, to honor the Kohen first, is Mipnei Darche Sholem. Rabbi asks, "Kol haTorah kol nami bnei darkei shalom." Isn't the whole purpose of the Torah to make shalom in the world? Dichtiv, as the pasuk says, "Drachecha darkei noyam." The paths of the Torah are paths of peace. V'chol nesivseha shalom, and all of the ways of the Torah are ways of peace, and all of its paths are shalom. At one point, is derech means like the main road. Nesivos are like side roads. So it means whether you're talking about the regular road, the regular way that things are done, or whether you're talking about nesivseha, the one-off kinds of things that happen. To be done in both of them, the Torah is there to promote pleasantness and to promote peace. So therefore, so it can't be that. So what do we mean? That this whole point of honoring the Kohen first is mipnei darkei shalom. Then, if it's a mitzvah in the Torah, then everything in the Torah is for shalom. So rather, Abaya says, no, this that we're saying in the Mishnah about that the Kohen goes first, Mipnei Darkei Shalom, is not actually talking about necessarily the Kohen getting the Aliyah first, but rather it's meant to tell us what my Rebbe said. Abaya's Rebbe is Rabba Bar Nachmeni, the regular Rabbi in Shas. So Abaya is going to quote something that his Rebbe explained based on a Braisa, and that the point is that we're going to say that this Mitnei Darkei Shalom is referring to that. So it's not specifically a Dabar Shebekedusha, but nevertheless we show honor over there. D'tanya, we learn in a Braisa, Shnayim Mamtinin Zelo Zebekaira. Suppose you have two people eating together out of one bowl. In those times, it was more common that even you didn't necessarily have separate plates or bowls for every person, and everybody would eat out of a common bowl. Nowadays, an equivalent would be, let's say you have a couple of people sitting and eating potato chips or popcorn or what have you, and they both eat out of a common bowl. So then, Mamtin and Zelozebakaira, they have to wait for one another when it comes to the bowl. Meaning if one of them takes a break to go to the bathroom or to take a drink or whatever, the other one can't continue eating while the first one is gone, he should wait. Out of Derech Eretz. Shloisha in Mamtinin, but if it was three of them, then they don't have to wait if he goes, and if he goes off to do something else, or to drink or whatever, they're entitled to continue eating out of that common bowl. The Braisa continues, Habitzea, the one who breaks the bread, the Balabais is usually the one who says the Bracha Amotzi and slices the bread, who pushes Yodei Tchila, he's the one who puts his hand into the bowl first to take the bread to say to eat after Hamotzi. But if he wants to give kovod to his rebbe or to somebody who's greater than him, then he has permission to do that, and it's not considered a disgrace to his own kovod. So now, in this connection, the point is, in other words, part of the point of honoring a kohen then is so. In other words, that's the point of Dauke Shalom that we're talking about. The Mishnah is saying kohen kodeshin va'achr of Levi va'achr of Yisrael. That Abaye is saying based on what we just said. That's min haTorah. But when the Mishnah uses the words mifnei Dauke Shalom, that's referring to something else. That's referring to something else that the Chachamim said to promote Dauke Shalom, namely this business of how people should eat together out of a common plate or a common bowl. Further on, so the Gemara goes into dealing with a lot of dinim of Kriyas HaTorah in this connection, the dinim of who gets Aliyas in what order, and in that connection the Gemara mentions a question that people asked Reb Chelboy about after the Kohen Levi Yisrael, what's the order after that of people who should be getting Aliyas, and he answers them. So then the Gemara mentions, and that the Gemara digresses then to mention another question that they asked Reb Chelboy, the people of the Galil, of the north of Eretz Yisrael, asked Reb Chelboy, are you allowed to read in public instead of from a complete Sefer Torah, from individual chumashim? They had all of their books in those times were written as scrolls. They actually found, for example, they found a fragment of Gemara from the early times of the Gaonim that's written in a scroll form. So in those early times, we're going to talk about in the sugya over here about how Torah Shebichsav, Torah Shebal Peh, was originally supposed to be Baal Peh, and only beginning with the Mishnah and the Gemara, they start writing it down, but when they wrote it down, it was still in the form of scrolls. But the point is, if they had individual chumashim as well, they would be in the form of scrolls, same as a Sefer Torah, but smaller.
All Sefer Torahs from that time,
Whether they were in a case or whether they were in a mantle, I don't know. We find in the Gemara, we find reference to mantle of Sefer Torah, mitbechos svarim, which suggests that they had more like ours, but it could be some people had it one way and some people had it the other way. I don't know if we know for sure. Any ancient Sifrei Torah, they haven't really found very many, much in the way of ancient Sifrei Torah. They finally have the Dead Sea Scrolls, but that's something else, really. The oldest, as far as I know, the oldest complete Sefer Torah that they know of is like from the 13th century or so. They found fragments. What?
Everything by Rabbi Nissim, I think.
So there is one that's attributed to the Ran, although whether it's actually written by the Ran is questionable. But yeah, there are. Yeah. In any case. But yeah, I mean, they found fragments of older Sifrei Torah. But yeah. So whether they were in Mantlach or whether they were in cases like Ashkenazic Sifrei Torah or in cases like Sfardish or ones, I don't know. In any case, the point is, so now the people of the Galil are asking Reb Chelboy, basically, we can't afford a complete Sefer Torah, can we read in public from Chumashim, from scrolls of the individual Chumashim? But it seems, by the way, and I think Doris Hadashonim points this out, we find from based on various Gemaras in the Yerushalmi, that during that period, the Romans sometimes were attacking shuls and burning the Sefer Torah. So therefore, the people, they may not have a complete Sefer Torah, and they can't easily afford to get a new one, so therefore, they're asking whether they can make do with a Chumash. Anyway, the Gemara says you can't because of Kvod Tzibur, so that leads the Gemara into a discussion about Bechlal, the question of writing parts of the Torah, of writing a complete Chumash by itself, for sure you can write, that's considered a safer of its own. But the Gemara gets into a whole discussion about writing parts of Torah Shebichsav, and also about writing Torah Shebal Peh. So the Gemara says, Rabbi Yochanan, Rish Lakish, Ma'ani b'Sifra d'Agadda b'Shabbos. Rabbi Yochanan, Rish Lakish would look into a sefer of Agadda on Shabbos. So during the week, they're busy learning halacha, they're fatifing zichan halacha. Comes Shabbos, they want to relax a little bit, so now they're learning Agadda, and they would read it from a written sefer. Again, the pashtus that would have been in scroll form, but it was written down. So the question is, how could they do that for all the nitin lekosev? Such things are not supposed to be written down. It's part of Torah Shabbal Peh, and as the Gemara is going to point out as we go through the sugya, you're not supposed to write down Torah Shabbal Peh. And that din was still in effect in Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish's times. There is, by the way, Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish are a generation or two after Rebbe. And Rebbe, we know, composed the Mishnah. There is a major machlokus between Rashi and the Rambam about whether Rebbe actually wrote the Mishnah or whether he only compiled it and formulated the wording of it bal peh. Rashi consistently, whenever he talks about Rebbe and what he accomplished, he always uses words like sidur or tikkun or other things like that, implying that it was still bal peh. The Rambam writes kosav, that he wrote it. But even according to the Rambam, we would have to say, fine, there was authorization to write the Mishnah, because, as the Gemara is going to say, Eis Lasa Slashem, but there wasn't yet authorization more widely to write Torah Shabbat Peh, and therefore, so now, Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish, how are they able to read from a sefer of Agadah? And the answer is that that's what it is. And part of the question is also, if you're not allowed to write it, then such a sefer would be considered Muktzah on Shabbos. Because if you're not allowed to use it, then it would be Muktzah. So the answer is Ela Kivin Delay Efsher. The answer is, since it's impossible any other way, because otherwise these parts of Torah Shabbat Peh were going to be forgotten, then we say, it's a time to do on behalf of Hashem, and therefore they violate your Torah, meaning the Chachamim had to make a takana l'shem shamayim, that because it's necessary, and it needs to be written down, and otherwise it's going to be forgotten. So basically, Marsha explains, in other words, the meaning, if we analyze the meaning of the pasuk, is that the original purpose, there's many reasons Mephoshim talk about why Torah Shabbal Peh was originally supposed to be Baal Peh. We'll talk about some of them as we go through the piece over here. But one thing is, in earlier generations, where they were able, they were very broad-minded, they had a tremendous capacity for learning and for memorizing, so therefore they couldn't write it down, and the idea would be that way a person should be constantly reviewing his learning and know it very, very carefully, and lasos, it would bring Talmud, maybe the day mice, it would bring them, now knowing it, they would actually be able to fulfill it. But in later times, in the smatu alavavis, people's capacity has grown smaller, and they wouldn't remember it, so therefore it's going to be forgotten, and they're not going to be lasos, so therefore now instead the lasos, so it has to be accomplished by writing it down. That's what we mean, Eis Lasa Slashem. So even though it's Feir Torah Secha, that now a person thinks that he doesn't have to review as much because he can rely on the fact that it's written, nevertheless, there was no choice. And the Chidah, in fact, brings that that was the idea. So here the Maharsha is saying the idea is they had a greater capacity, therefore they didn't have to write it down. The Chidah says it goes the other way around also. Because they continued reviewing and learning Torah over and over again, therefore that made them much greater and refined their gufim much more so than in later times where we don't spend as much time reviewing Torah. So in short, in their times, since Agadta was in danger of being forgotten, then therefore they had authorization to write it down, and therefore Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish were making use of such a sefer. There is, by the way, an interesting point that's brought. I think that Ramchal says this, but I don't remember. He says that we're learning Ein Yaakov every day over here, which is all the stories and all the non-legal parts of the Gemara. And many of them are, we have some of them are very strange stories. We're going to have in a couple of days, we'll have the story of Ashmedai and Benayahu, for example. And what are they doing in the Gemara? So he explains these are all, they represent concepts in Torah, whether we're talking about Pnimius HaTorah, whether we're talking about philosophical ideas that the Chachamim wanted us to know, whatever it is exactly, the point is, they didn't want to write it out b'feirush because then people are going to misunderstand them. So instead, they concealed them within codes, within strange stories and talks about, and things we're going to have in the next parak, we're going to talk about cures and all kinds of things like that, where a simple person will read it, yeah, this sounds like a nice story, or sounds like an interesting medical idea. And meanwhile, the Chachamim will delve into it and then discover the ideas behind it, the ideas that the Chacham hid within those things. This also Al-Sedevin mentions in Tanya that Agadez Roiv Sodas HaTorah Gnuzin Bo, most of the secrets of Torah are hidden in it. So that all, and it goes on to say, and then you have all the parts of it that teach us Midas Tovus, which after all, that's when Rabbi Yaakov ben Chaviv started writing the Ein Yaakov. He mentions in his introduction that he wants to gather together all the things in the Gemara that, among other things, that teach us Midas Tovus and that teach us about the greatness of the Eivishter and the Torah and so on and so forth. So yeah.
Who was the treatment?
The Ein Yaakov. So the compiler of it was Rabbi Yaakov ben Chaviv in the late 14, early 1500s. He was a rabbi in Spain before the expulsion from there. And then in his times, there was a popular sefer that had been written about a generation before that called Menorah Samar, which gathered together a lot of this material under different headings. So I'll have, for example, a section of Avas Hashem, and I'll have various Mamori Chazal that have to do with that, and a section of the Midah, and I'll have a section about that. He called it Menorah Samar because he gathered it under seven major headings. So Rabbi Yaakov decided that instead of doing like that, and that misses out a lot of things that don't neatly fit into any of those categories, so instead he compiled it more or less in the order of the Gemara.
The television also Mejaperes Abonos in terms of Ein Yaakov. You know what is the connection?
Say what?
Mejaperes Abonos, learning Ein Yaakov.
Mejaperes Abonos, yeah, Al Sedevin mentioned that point over there also, yeah.
What's the
connection, I guess, is because it teaches a person Midas Tovus and then teaches him to, about among the things that Rabbi Yaakov ben Chaviv writes in his introduction is he gathered together all the parts of the Gemara that talk about the importance of Tshuva, for example, so it helps a person gain Midas Tovus and then abandon his Averus, and therefore it helps be Mechaper for him, yeah. Okay. Anyway, so the point is, again, in Rabbi Yochanan and Shlokish's time, there was already danger that this material is going to be forgotten, and therefore they had no choice but to write it down. So the Gemara continues with this point about Ein Koistvin Chola. The Gemara discusses this question about whether you're allowed to write parts of the Torah, and the Gemara discusses and says that no, you can't. So the Gemara says Eisvei. So we have a question. What do you mean you're not allowed to write parts of the Torah? Of Torah Shemachsav. A Mishnah says in Yuma, describes all the great things that various figures in Jewish history did on behalf of the Beis HaMikdash, and therefore we remember them L'Shvach, we remember them favorably for that. So one of them is about Hil, the famous Hilmi Amalka. First it mentions a gift that she gave to the Beis HaMikdash, and then it continues. Afi Osa Tavla Shel Zahav. She also made a golden tablet, Shaparsha Sota Ksuva Aleha, that the parasha of the Sota is written on it. A Kohen, when the Sota is brought to the Beis HaMikdash, the Kohen has to write out a small scroll that says over there a few psukim from the parasha Sota, from parasha Nasa, the whole oath that he makes to swear Imel Shachav Ishoisach, etc., and he writes it on a scroll of a parchment, and then he raises it into and dissolves the ink into the water over there. So up until that point, they would have to bring, every time the Kohen needed to write a Parsha Sota, they would have to bring a Sefer Torah out for that purpose. So instead, Hilmi Amalka made this tablet, and that way you can copy the words off the tablet. The question is, though, Mela writing the Parsha Sota itself, fine, that's no different than the Parsha is a Tefillin or Mezuzah or something. It's a mitzvah in the Torah to write it, so no problem that it's only a Parsha. But what about, there's no mitzvah in the Torah to write it on a golden tablet, so and yet she did that, so therefore, so doesn't that mean that you are allowed to write sections of the Torah? So the answer is Omer Shlokish Mishrim Reb Yanai the Aleph Beis. So Rosh Lakish says that no, what it was is the tablet was written with Aleph Beis, meaning it was only Rosh Tevis. The Gemara in Yoma goes and discusses it a little further, explains that what it would have is, for example, it would have the first word or two of the pasuk out in full, and then the rest of it would be in Rosh Tevis. So let's say you have the section where he writes Im Loi Shachav Ish Oisach, so you have Im written out in full, and then you have Lamed Shin Aleph, whatever, and the Kohen, that would jog the Kohen's memory to make sure that he doesn't miss any words. But it's true, he's not copying word for word because it couldn't be written on that because you can't write Parshias by themselves. Marsha has a different explanation over here because he says the Lashon Aleph Beis doesn't suggest just initials. Rather, he says it means the full words were written out, but instead of writing them out as words, they were written out as individual letters with spaces between them. So therefore, that's not considered writing out the Torah in full. Okay. So the Gemara goes and then continues to discuss this point about writing parts of the Torah. In the course of it, the Gemara mentions the point that there's Machloikas, which now we're going to learn about in Ein Yaakov. How was the Torah originally given to Moshe? The two ways are called Megillah Nitna, which means that Hashem gave Moshe each section and he wrote it down individually. So Rashi says, for example, you have, let's say, the Megillah of Bereishis, which consists basically of Parashas Bereishis. Then you have the Megillah of Noach, which is the life story of Noach, which is Parashas Shemos. Then you have the Megillah of Avraham, which would be Parashas Lech Lecha and Vayera, the life story of Avraham, and so forth. And so the Torah is put together like that, a Megillah at a time. The other way is called Chasuma Nitna, which means at the end of the 40 years, Hashem tells Moshe to write down the entire Torah in one shot. So the Gemara mentions that point in connection with this whole question of writing parts of the Torah. You could argue that maybe if the Torah was originally given Megillah Megillah, maybe it's valid to write down individual sections. Maybe you could, for example, write Parshas Bereishis by itself, because to begin with, it was given as a separate Megillah. But the Gemara says, no, it's not so. Even according to that opinion, you can't. So,
not about
Torah Shabbat Sound. There's two different things the Gemara is dealing with over here, two overlapping points. One is about writing parts of Torah Shabbat Sound, less than an entire Chumash, and the other part is about writing Torah Shabbat Peh. So in fact, the Gemara actually ends up saying that in the end, both of them ended up becoming mutter again because Eis L'Asas L'Hashem. So for example, the Gemara mentions they had a Sefer Haftarta. They had, for example, like nowadays, you have a volume that has all the Haftaras printed in it so that you open up to the page and you read from the Haftarta. The point is, in principle, you would think maybe you shouldn't do that. You should have to have an entire scroll of Yeshua, an entire scroll of Shoftim, and so forth. But the problem was, again, it's a matter of Eis L'Asas L'Hashem. Many places can't afford that. And then they're not going to be able to read the Haftarta at all. So therefore, there became a heter to write sections like that. And so the Gemara is discussing all the pros and cons of that point. So the Gemara says, Amar Rav Yochanan Mishum Rabbana, HaTorah Megillah Megillah Nitna. Again, the Torah was given one Megillah at a time, so each section Hashem tells Moshe, and he writes it, and then eventually, at the end of 40 years, he put it all together, and he has the complete Sefer Torah. Shenemar, as the Pasuk says, Oz Amarti, then says David on himself, then I said, Hine Vossi, behold, I've come, the Megillah Sefer, Kosovolai, it's written about me in the Megillah of the Sefer. Meaning, Rashi explains, this goes back to the time we learned about a while back in Yevamos, after David killed Goliath, and Shaul is wondering to himself, say, who is this guy? Is he, I know he's from Shevet Yehuda, is he descended from Peretz, and that's the family from whom kings are going to come, or is he descended from Zerach, and that just means he's going to be an important person? And Doya Gad Doimi, who we're learning currently about in Yaakov as well, in Daf Yomi as well, Doya Gad Doimi says, never mind whether he's from Peretz or Zerach, ask whether he's Bechal, a kosher a yid, because his great-grandmother was Rus HaMoyavia, and at that time, the fact that a Moyavi woman is allowed to intermarry into the Jewish people once she's in Niskaya was not really that well-known. The Gemara in Yevamos, we learned about it in Yevamos, had a whole thing where they had to discuss it back and forth, and eventually it became accepted as halacha, but still throughout the rest of David's life, his enemies kept on bringing up this point. Anyway, so David says, Ozamarti, then, when Shaul and Doeg are arguing that I should be posel lover b'kohol, and instead they went to the Beis Medrash, and they were told unequivocally that the halacha is, Amoni v'lay Amonis, me'ovi v'lay me'ovis, then says David, I said about myself, Hine vossi, behold, now I've come, now I'm able to be a full-fledged member of the Jewish people, the Megillah Sefer, kosovolai, and in fact, it's written about me in the Megillah of the Sefer, the Megillah, specifically the Megillah of Avraham, which became part of the Sefer Torah. Namely, that you have, when you have the whole story of Loit and his daughters over there, so you have the expression when the Malachim are telling them you gotta get out of Sodom as fast as possible, he tells him, take your two daughters, Hanim Tsois, that are found. And then you have the Pasuk in Capital Pei Tes, Matsosi David Avdi. So David says, I realize now that's why Hashem wrote that whole story of Loit and his daughters fleeing Sodom and then producing the nations of Ammon and Moab is in order to tell about how it's going to be with me that I am kosher lover b'kohol. So therefore, so he's mentioning Megillah Sefer, so we see that section of the Torah says Rabbi Yochanan was originally a Megillah of its own, that Hashem dictated to Moshe the story of Avraham's life, which includes Parshas Lech Lecha Vayera, maybe Chayisara as well, and then eventually it became part of the whole Torah. So that's Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Shimon Lakish Omer, Torah Chasuma Nidna. Rabbi Lakish says the Torah was given complete as one thing. So it was good. At the end, Hashem tells Moshe, Hashem dictates to Moshe the whole Torah, and he wrote it down. Shenema, as the apostle says, L'koyach ha-sefer ha-Torah hazeh. Take this Torah, implying that it was all written as one complete thing, this Torah. Tosfos actually discusses that even according to the opinion Torah Megillah Megillah Nikna, what it may mean, in other words, is sometimes you have, we know this concept Ein Mukdim Ochavat Torah, that there's no, that many times you have things are out of chronological order in the Torah. So the Vort here, the Gemara is going to quote soon, that there are certain parashiyos scattered throughout the Torah that were given at different times outside of the order in which they're written in the Torah. So the idea would be that even according to the idea, Torah Megillah Megillah Nifna would mean that each time one Megillah is not to be written, is not told to Moshe to be written until the previous Megillah was given and written down. So say, for example, the Gemara is going to mention over here, let's say that the parasha of Achrei Mos was given on Aleph Nissan. So that would mean, for example, even you have other events in the Torah that come after that, Hashem wouldn't have told Moshe to write those until he told them to write down Parshas Achrei Mos, and so forth. Okay, so the Gemara says, V'idoch nami hoksiv l'koyach. So new, what is Rabbi Yochanan doing with the pasuk l'koyach, which suggests that to begin with the Torah is one perfect, complete thing? And the answer is, Ahu l'basa d'edbach. Fine, he says, after all the Megillus were attached together, then you have Sefer HaTorah Azeh. Doesn't mean that to begin with they weren't separate Megillus. V'idoch nami, what does Rish Lakish do with the pasuk hoksiv, the Megillus Sefer Kosov Alai? He says, Ahu d'chol HaTorah kula ikri Megillah. He says, doesn't mean the Torah is made up of separate Megillus that afterwards were joined together. The whole Torah collectively can be called a Megillah, a scroll. D'chtib, as you find the pasuk, the Novi says, Vayomer Eli Mo'ataroya, the Malach was speaking to the Novi Zechariah and showing him different visions, asks him, what do you see? Va'omer, and he says, Ani Roya Megillah Ofa, I see a flying Megillah. The word Ofa actually can have two different meanings. It can mean flying, or it can mean, unfolded. Whatever the case, the point is, and then it refers to the Torah, the Gemara in Eruvin actually says that it's talking about Torah Shabbat Peh, but the point is that the Torah can be called a scroll. Usually Megillah means a smaller scroll, like Megillah's Esther or something, or like the other Chumash Megillahs, but the whole Torah as a whole can be called that. Marshall explains the basic underlying argument over here is, the Torah is given by one Hashem, but we human beings, we recipients of it, have differences. In other words, in terms of siddus, you have Das Elyon versus Das Tachton. From the point of view of Das Elyon, the Eibishter's point of view, the Torah is one. From the point of view of Das Tachton, of us, the recipients, then therefore you have Torah has different portions, and therefore Megillah, Megillah, Nitna, that's given relative to us, the Mekablim. The Torah Chasuma, Nitna, Rish Lakish's view would be from Hashem's point of view, so to speak. Okay. The Gemara says, Inami, another possibility that the Megillah Sefer, that the reason why the Torah can be called Megillah, so the first answer is the Torah collectively is called Megillah, but the second answer is that the word Megillah can refer to certain specific sections where we find that those were taka all given on one day by Hashem to Moshe Rabbeinu, and those were written at different parts, so Rashi explains, again, let's say, for example, we have one of them as Parshas Achrei Mos, so the idea would be, let's say, for example, that so now, let's say on Aleph Nissan, Hashem tells Moshe to write the parasha of Achrei Mos, the Avodah of Yom Kippur. Then what happens is, later on, when Hashem tells him to write the whole Torah, so he starts writing from Bereshis until there, then he skips Achrei Mos because he already had that from before, and then he continues from after that parasha and continues until the next one, and so forth. So therefore, in that sense, it can be called Megillah because you do have those eight sections that were written individually. Elohein and they are so lechid Reb Levi, so therefore it would go with what Reb Levi says. The Omer Reb Levi, Shmona Parshias Nemru Boi B'Yom. Nemru B'Yom Shehukam by a Mishkan. There were eight Parshias in the Torah that were said on the day when the Mishkan was set up. Elohein and they are as follows. Parshas Koyanim. The first one is the Parsha of the Koyanim, which is Parshas, the beginning of Parshas Emor, which talks about the halachas of the Koyanim. And this is on that day, on Aleph Nissan, the Koyanim are beginning the Avodah and the Mishkan. So therefore, we need to know the halachas, who's allowed and who's not allowed to serve in the Beis Mikdash. It mentions over there the Bali Mum, it mentions over there the Tmeim, and so forth. So that has to be written for us to know. As far as the identification of some of these parashiyos, Tosfos disagrees on some of them, and we'll go through them and we'll discuss them. So Parshas Koyanim, or Parshas Levim, and the Parsha of the Levim, which is, it actually has two explanations. The first explanation is that it means the section at the beginning of Bahaloscha that talks about how Moshe is supposed to take the Levim and make them ready for their service in the Mishkan. So again, on this day, the Levim are going to start serving and assisting the Koyanim and the Mishkan. Therefore, we need to know what the rules for them are. Rashi brings a second explanation that the parasha of the Levim refers to the section about Ma'aseh Rishon at the end of Parashas Korach. However, Rashi does not like that explanation because, first of all, why would we need to know that now? They're not going to be starting to give Ma'aseh Rishon and Trumas Ma'aseh for many years to come. They have to first go through the 40 years in Eretz Yisrael and 14 Sheva Shekovshu v'Sheva Shechok, or the 7 years when they were conquering and dividing Eretz Yisrael, and only then did Trumas and Ma'aseh go into effect. So there'd be no reason why Hashem has to davka give that section on this day, on Aleph Nissen of the second year in the Midbar. Besides that, Rashi says that section we called Parshas Ma'aseh. There'd be no reason to call it Parshas Levim. So Rashi's preferred explanation again is that we're talking about the parasha where it discusses what the Levim are going to be doing. So, that's the second one. The third one is, or Parshas Tmeim, the Parsha of the Tmeim. Rashi says this is the section in Bahaloscha that talks about the people who were Tomei and couldn't bring the Korban Pesach, and therefore, so the idea would be that now on that day the next thing we're going to have is Parshas Shiluach Tmeim. The next one is the mitzvah that certain kinds of Tmeim have to leave the Machna. So now, what it is on that day, you have, it's official, there are three Machnas. There are three machnas: machna Shechina, machna Levia, and machna Yisrael, and various categories of Tmeim have to leave the different ones. So now the Tmeim come and ask Moshe, well, we're going to be Tomei, we're not going to be able to come to the Mishkan to bring the Korban Pesach, so what do we do? And Moshe asks Hashem, and Hashem tells him Pesach Sheni. So now, Rashi points out, I mean, if we're saying that this was given on Aleph Nissen, then they have plenty of time to become Tahor during that time. Because after all, from Rosh Chodesh Nissen, as the Gemara is going to mention soon, the Parah Adruma was one of the ones that was given on Beis Nissen. So therefore, they have plenty of time from then until Pesach to become Tahor. You only need 7 days to become Tahor from Trumas Nes. But the point is, if they don't become Tahor, what are they going to do? This is all according to Rashi. Tosfos actually argues and says the problem is if you're telling me that section about Pesach Sheni was said on Rosh Chodesh Nissen, the Gemara in Pesachim discusses the question, how long before Yom Tov do you have to be Sholen V'Doshin? You ask and you you ask Shilas and then Abonim are Doshining on the Halachas of the Yom Tov. So you have two opinions over there. One is 30 days and one is 2 weeks. The opinion that says 30 days learns it from the fact that what comes Pesach Rishon and Moshe is telling them about Pesach Sheni, which is in a month's time. Now, says Tosfos, if you're going to tell me Parshas Tmeim over here means the section about the Tmeim from Parshas Vayelotcha, then you have a month and a half from Rosh Chodesh Nissen until your Dalet year is a month and a half, and nobody says you have to do the halachas of a Yom Tov that far in advance. So rather, Tosfos explains Parshas Tmeim means the section also in Parshas Emor that talks about if the Kohenim are Tomei, that they can't do the Avodah and the various kinds of things that they could become Tomei with, Sheretz and Nevela, anything else that's involved with Trumas Mikdash V'Kodshav. So therefore, in other words, according to Tosfos, Parshas Kohenim would be the first section of Parshas Achrimos, which talks about Kohenim with Mumim and things like that, and the rules of who they're allowed and not allowed to marry. And then the second, and then Parshas Tmeim over here would be another part of Parshas Emor, which is the section about Koyanim who are Tomei. Marsha goes further and discusses this point further that what it means is, in other words, on Rosh Chodesh, 2 weeks before Pesach, then you have they have in that section, Parshas Vayelotcha, we're talking about the dinim of Pesach Rishon. So therefore, fine, according to Rav Shimon Gamliel, that's all you need is 2 weeks to announce that time. And while he's talking about Pesach Rishon, then he mentions also Pesach Sheni, even though that's a whole nother month later. The point is that we have two different opinions what Parshas Tmeim is. Over here, according to Rashi, it's a section from Vayelotcha about the people with Pesach Sheni, and according to Tosfos, it's a section about Koyanim being Tomei and not allowed to do the Avodah. Next, the Parshas Shiluach Tmeim. Then we have the section in Parshas Nosei, where Hashem says that all the Tmeim should be sent out of the Machna. Different categories of Tmeim are sent out of different numbers of Machnas. On that day, it became official that we have three Machnas. Up until then, the Mishkan's not been set up. So you don't have a Machna Shechina. Now it's official you have a Machna Shechina, which is the Mishkan, a Machna Leviyah, where Leviyim camp, and a Machna Yisrael, which is the rest of the camp. Next to Parshas Achrimos. Parshas Achrimos was also said on that day. Now, Parshas Achrimos talks about the Avodah of Yom Kippur. That's not going to be needed for another 6 months and some. Why is Hashem having to give it to Moshe then on Rosh Chodesh Nissan? Rashi explains, because after all, the Pasuk says, Achrimos Shnei Bnei Aaron, and it was told after Bnei Aaron passed away, and that happened because they went into the Kodesh HaKadoshim when they weren't supposed to. So now, Achrimos Shnei Bnei Aaron, then Hashem warns Aaron, then Hashem tells Moshe to warn Aaron that he and his other sons shouldn't do that, and that they should make sure not to go in unless on Yom Kippur, and with the proper korbanos. As Rashi mentions on the Pasuk over there, it's, you know, like you have one doctor tells a patient, don't do such and such, and the other doctor tells him, don't do such and such, so you don't die like Pliny, and that's a much stronger warning. So therefore, since Bnei Aaron, since Nadav and Avihu passed away that day, Rosh Chodesh Nissan, therefore the parasha of Achrimos, which is connected with that, also had to be given that day. Next, the Parshas Shesuria Yayin. Then you have the section in Parshas Shmini about the Kohenim who are drunk should not enter the Beis Mikdash, should do the Avodah. Again, first of all, it has to do, of course, with Nadav and Avihu also, because that's one of the things they did wrong. But also, again, they're going to be, from now on, the Kohenim are going to be coming in every day into the Mishkan to do the Avodah. So therefore, they need to know when they're not allowed to come in. The next one is a parashat Neiros. Then you have the section in the Torah talking about lighting the lamps of the menorah at the beginning of parashat Va'aloisa. Because again, on that day, they're starting to light the menorah every day to clean it out and to light it. So they need to know the details about it. Marsha actually wonders then in that case, why only that? Don't they need to know, well, let's say, for example, we should have the parasha of the Tamid should be included as well. From now on, they're going to be bringing the Korban Tamid every day. The Rashash explains that actually you have a Gemara in Chagiga that mentions that actually they were bringing the Korban Tamid, according to one opinion anyway, quite some time before that, all the way from Matan Torah. You have a Macholikus in the Gemara over there, when they brought Korbanus before Matan Torah, was that the very first Korban Tamid, and then they continued bringing it every day, even before the Mishkan was set up, or not? But in any case, they already knew the dinim of the Tamid before that, and therefore Hashem doesn't have to give it to Moshe now. And the last one, well, Parshas Parah Adumah, and the Parsha of the Parah Adumah, because again, now they need to be Tahor in order to be able to bring the Korban Pesach. And now Hashem couldn't have given it any earlier, Rashi points out, because part of the procedure of the Parah Adumah is you when the Kohen stands and sprinkles the blood in the direction of the Oyel Moed. In the Midbar, it would just be stand east of the Oyel Moed. In the Beis Hamikdash, he would stand on Harazesim facing towards the Beis Hamikdash. So told there's a Mishkan, there can't be a Parah Adumah. Mind you, it does say elsewhere, according to one opinion, that the Parah Adumah was one of the things given to them at Mora. So in that case, it would mean the basic concept that there's going to be a Parah Adumah was given to them then, but the details are being given here now on Rosh Chodesh Nissan. And in fact, Rashi brings from the Masechta Megillah. And Rosh Chodesh Nissan, Hashem told Moshe about the Parah Adumah, and the next day, Beis Nissan, the first Parah Adumah was prepared. Which is why we read Parshas Parah a couple of weeks before Pesach to alert people. Pesach is coming, better make sure to become Tahor for the Korban Pesach. Anyway, so the point is, therefore, Rish Lakish would say one reason why the Torah can be called Megillah Sefer, even if we take the view that the Torah was given all at once at the end of the 40 years, but these 8 parashiyos were given separately, and therefore those 8 parashiyos can be called Megillah. So because of that, the Torah collectively can be called Megillah. Yom Yom Mashiach Ogola, or the Dalad Nissen. The Rebbe talked about when we look at it from the Ruchniistic point of view, and even to the highest degrees of Ruchnius, we already have the Shlemus, we already have the perfection of everything that needs to be done, even all the way up to and including the Geula Ruchnius. So our spiritual eyes already see the Geula, now we have to open our physical eyes to also see the Geula, and see it as something that's open and visible to our physical eyes in this world. You have the famous story in that connection with Reb Mendel Horodoker, where one time this guy goes and starts blowing shofar on Harazesim, and everybody thinks that Mashiach has come, and Reb Mendel opens up his window and sniffs around and says, no, Mashiach's not here yet. And the famous question is, why he has to open the window? And the answer is because inside his house, it's already, Mashiach is already here. Okay, continuing with halachas of Eruv Tchumen. So we talked about yesterday the idea that if you have a city, whether it's a walled city or a city that has an Eruv within your 2,000 amos of your house or of your city or of your Eruv, then it counts, that whole city counts as 4 amos. So again, say for example that you're staying in a bungalow colony and then you have another, you put down an Eruv Tchumen, let's say, you put down an Eruv Tchumen of 1,000 amos from your colony, and then that means you have now 2,000 amos from there in that direction. Now, you go another 1,000 amos, let's say, and you find an entire bungalow colony that fits within that remaining 1,000 amos, then all of that counts as 4 amos, and then you have another 996 amos beyond that. But as opposed to if the Tchum ends in the middle of the colony, then nothing doing, then you can only walk as far as that. So now, the same thing. For example, you put your Eruv about 2,000 amos outside the city. Now, you have the same kind of thing. Let's say, without the Eruv, you'd be able to walk through your entire city, or your entire village, or bungalow colony, or what have you. Now, let's say you put your Eruv 2,000 amos away from the city. So now, when you're walking back, when your tchum is now centered on that Eruv, your 2,000 amos does not necessarily include your entire city. Mm-hmm. So therefore, the din would be that... The din would be that you wouldn't be able to go in your city beyond the 2,000 amma limit, and that means that there would be parts of the city that would be off limits to you. You might even have that your own house might then conceivably be outside the 2,000 ammas. Imagine, for example, you have imagine that your bungalow in the colony is, let's say, close to the eastern end of it. You put your Eruv Tchumen 2,000 amos from the west end of the bungalow colony. Well, then your 2,000 amos only go to the edge of your colony, and you have a problem being able to get back to your bungalow on Shabbos. So in short, be careful with that kind of thing if you're going to put down an Eruv Tchumen and make sure that you still have enough leeway to actually be able to go back to your house.
Oh.